1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Ken Kale here, and we are about to embark on an adventure on the radio right here on WKXL. And we are starting a new program here on the radio station, and it's going to feature Jane Cormier. Jane, nice to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you are the star of this show. this is the maiden voyage. We'll break out the champagne, crack it against the ship, and we'll be all set to go.
Oh, my, I'm excited.
There you go. Maybe we could use some champagne during the course of this program. But Jane, great to have you with us. And Jane has been involved in the local arts community for many, many years. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, first of all?
Well, my background really, if I'm being a purist, is totally in the music realm. I have been a singer since I can remember. I think my first performance was at the Tremont Temple Church when I was about
Tremont Temple in Boston?
In Boston.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that. Yeah.
How cool that was. I was a little kid. My music teacher took me in with three or four other kids.
Yeah.
And we got to sing at the church on the radio.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a big deal. So that was the first real big thing for music.
Your first foray into the musical world. Yeah.
And
at Tremont Temple.
Tremont Temple in Boston.
Yeah.
And since then, I've seen a good part of the world with my opera singing.
Yeah.
And it's been a thrilling lifestyle, I have to tell you. I've learned a lot, not just about music, it's been an all immersed kind of program in my life, because I am an educator for music as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just performance, it's educating in that realm that's really important.
So your music career, your music adventure has taken you throughout the world. I've seen some of the places you've visited, and you've been to four corners of the world, as they say.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that and some of the places that you did visit on your musical journey.
Most of my experience is in Italy, Germany, Austria, and Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to live in Austria, I should say. I always say Germany, it's Austria.
Yeah.
For about a couple of years when I was singing different repertoire there. The big gig in Austria was singing with Andrew Lloyd Webber's Phantom.
Ah.
Das Phantom der Oper in German.
Is that Phantom of the Opera?
It is. And I sang Carlotta, which was, of course, the hysterical diva.
Right.
I don't know why I was cast in that role.
Oh, I have no clue.
But it was fun. It was a great way to get my feet wet in the operatic world. Came back home and decided after I got married that we wanted to settle down and have kids.
Mm-hmm.
So probably about 5 years into that, I still traveled. I still went through this country, different states that had opera companies.
Mm-hmm.
Indianapolis Opera, Kentucky Opera, all over the place. But when Catherine was about five or six, I didn't want to travel
anymore. Now, that's your daughter.
That's my daughter, Catherine, And
I met before you, many years before you.
Yes, absolutely. And she sort of made it, we wanted to stay put in New Hampshire, and that's when we started our little opera company here in New Hampshire. Which is called Piccola Opera. It used to be Opera Fest of New Hampshire, and then we sort of had a break from that for a few years, and about 8 years ago, we started Piccola Opera. 10 years now, I think. We're getting close to 10.
And time flies when you're having fun.
It does. Yeah. It does. So we're still going ahead and doing all kinds of cool stuff. In fact, right now, tonight in Southampton, New York, we have our troupe of young opera singers performing at an outstage venue. And they're doing Opera in the Park in Southampton. And they're all excited because they get to stay in this gorgeous mansion.
Yeah.
I mean, just like you see on TV.
In the Hamptons. Whoa.
Yes. And so it's a big she moment for them. So we try to do that. We want to work with young singers emerging out of conservatory and give them performance venues. And so we've been pretty active. We performed right through COVID. We did it safely.
Yeah.
A lot of outdoor singing, a lot of spatial distancing.
Yeah.
But we didn't stop. And I have to tell you, how rare that was this past
no,
year and a half.
No doubt about that. No doubt about that. Very rare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that is outstanding. Never stopped.
Never did.
Because of COVID. That is really something. So yeah. So how do I know people are already energized about Piccola? Is that?
That's it. Piccola opera.
Piccola opera.
Piccola in Italian is little.
Now, when you were overseas, you opera is done generally in Italian, correct?
There's German opera in all kinds of languages.
Okay.
But certainly Europe is the home,
right?
That's where it was born. And don't forget, every little, if you're in Germany or Austria, not so much Italy, but somewhat in Italy too, but Germany and Austria, opera is in the cultural mainstream of those little communities.
More so than in this country.
Totally.
Yeah.
So like every little community in Germany and Austria will have a thriving opera house. And so for the young opera singer in this country, the 80 percentile, I would think, that come back, you know, that really want the career, have to go to Europe. They get an agent.
Yeah.
And then they get a contract. They sing there for a few years because these houses run year round.
Right.
They're not like us that have a summer season, right? And then they come back here and work.
Wow.
This is a great training ground. So it's different in opera than here, in Europe than here.
Yeah, I mean, because in this country, it's really not mainstream.
It's not.
No, but you would like it to be.
Well, you know what? Yeah. Our motto is to entertain, educate, and enlighten. And enlighten is really important because unless we let folks know that this isn't that boring old, medium where we have fat ladies and horns, they could miss out on really what has been a historic cultural art form.
Yeah.
You know, late 1600s, and here we are, 2021, and I'm a firm believer that greatness lasts.
Yeah. Well, I know people still flock weekly to the Metropolitan Opera in New York.
Yeah.
Which is, I have never seen a performance at the Met.
Ah.
I took a tour and saw the inside.
It's magnificent,
isn't
it?
Oh, it is. Yes. It's a wonderful place. But that is one of my bucket list things.
Oh, you have to go.
See an opera at the Met.
It's absolutely. You won't forget it. I was so lucky because I lived on 57th Street in New York City for about 4 years.
And that's right in that vicinity.
Right, right there. Right, yeah. We're in mid-60s, Lincoln Center. And my coach was the assistant conductor, one of the assistant conductors at the Met. And so I would be at the Met backstage 3 days a week and taking coachings and working on master classes. And there were fun times that we actually got to sing on the stage of the Met while a performance was actually going on in the front.
Really?
That's how big that stage is.
I guess so.
Right?
It is. It is huge.
So very cool. So I had a really odd education in opera. I didn't go to conservatory. I did a couple of years in grad school. But my degree was in creative arts with a minor in psychology.
Mm-hmm.
So I came to opera kind of through the back door and found a way to get trained without going the routine, way. But I think the training was exceptional because I got to see 3 nights a week the Metropolitan on stage.
Isn't that something? You know what amazes me? Whenever I see the Metropolitan Opera on television, are the sets.
Yes.
The sets just are incredible, including sometimes live animals.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. You're doing Aida. You have to have those live animals. There are some people that will, purists that might say it's not true, but I maintain that in any country in the world, on any given night, the Met is the greatest opera house in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe anybody can touch the artistic, like you said, the sets.
Right. Cost,
the level of it is so high. And just the visual alone is so awe-inspiring.
Right.
Put the great singing in front of it.
Let alone the singing, right.
That's right.
Right, yeah. But the sets, I mean, it just must be, I mean, obviously they have a lot of people employed at the Met just building sets and creating sets.
Gosh, you wouldn't believe it. I mean, when you go backstage, now you remember that the stage is about the size of a football field.
Yeah.
Okay, put that into context.
Yeah, really.
Right? And there's no amplification of the voice, right, when you're singing. Everybody says, oh, they mic at the Met. They do not mic at the Met.
They don't?
No.
I didn't realize that.
4,000-seat house.
Wow, yeah. And it's big.
That's right.
The acoustics are amazing,
they built it for the acoustics.
Yeah.
So the human voice, well-trained, can sing with a pit, full of 40, 50 players more if you're singing Wagner, right? Yeah. And be heard. But you could go onto the set, you could go onto the stage of the Met, and you might see three different sets ready to be rolled out way in the back at any time. And they have all kinds of, you know, what are those lifts? I forget what they call hydraulic things on the stage.
Right,
they can put these sets together lickety-split if they know. They have the best crews in the world.
It would be amazing. I wish someone would do a documentary behind the scenes.
Oh, that's a great idea.
At the Met. I mean, that would be fascinating.
Absolutely.
It really, like I say, I took a tour once, and I remember them saying that they actually have live animals. They have a section, you know, for live animals out in the facility as well.
It's true.
Right in the heart of Manhattan.
Yes.
Yeah. You wouldn't think so necessarily.
No, absolutely.
That's one of the bucket list things. And you really experienced it as close as you possibly could.
I think so.
Yeah. I guess you did three times a week, right?
Well, for a short period of time. Very lucky.
Yeah.
Very lucky.
How did that happen?
Okay. So I actually went to an institution called the American Institute of Musical Studies.
Yeah.
I think I was 26. And I got in for the musical theater program because that's what I was into.
Yeah.
You know, I could tap dance like crazy. I took like 8 years of tap dance and dance. I was a good dancer. And I was going to be the next Broadway hit, right? And I was doing a program of Gershwin in someplace in Austria. I can't remember the community. And was singing with an orchestra, the American Institute Orchestra. And this woman, and this is literally true. I think back to this and I go, wow. Out of the audience, this redheaded woman came up to me and she said, hi, my name is Joan Dorneman. And I heard you singing, honey. You have a beautiful voice. Have you ever thought of singing opera for a career? And I looked at her and I kind of laughed, you know. I kind of thought,
opera?
Yeah, forget it, you know, right? And she gave me her business card. And she told me, because this was the summer now, it's probably June or July. And she said to me, if you come to New York City, I will train you. I will work with you. And I thanked her. But, you know, inside I'm thinking, yeah, forget it. What would I stop what I'm doing to go to learn opera? Well, my professor at college, when he heard this story, he knew Joan Dorneman. And he knew that she was probably one of the five most influential women in classical music. Assistant conductor at the Met, A house prompter. What does that mean? That means that all of the A casts that came into the Met to sing a production that was in Italian, she was in the prompter box. Joan never did the B casts. She did the A casts, and she was the greatest at prompting. Because a prompter does is the Met stage is so immense that the conductor could be so far away, you can't really catch a lot of what he's doing. That pit is immense. And so the conductor sits in a box that has a black back. The audience can't see, but it's an open front. And the conductor throws the cues for the singers, you know, or if they get off, she can actually, or he can actually start singing a little, line if it's an ensemble to get someone back on.
Right.
So the prompter is really an important part at the Met because it's just too big. You know, smaller companies might not have them.
Sure,
But so she was really famous. And when he said, Jane, do you realize who this woman is? Well, I figured, what the heck?
Yeah.
So I went to New York City and met her. I think the first time was at her apartment. Second meeting was backstage at the Met at her office. And that sold it for me. But she opened up a score. I'll never forget it. She opened up a score of Rigoletto, Verdi's Rigoletto, of course. You know, I didn't know Rigoletto. And she said, okay, we're starting at the beginning. And we did. And I learned probably five or six roles within a year and a half with Joan. And started performing and started auditioning. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I came to it late. But I was gigging. I was living, you know, on my music fees from about 28 onward. Wow. Which is really cool.
It really is.
You know?
Yeah.
So it was great.
So you know what amazes me is how, you know, as you say, you learn so many roles in, I'm sure, a short amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And how these performers can, you know, move from one show to another. Oh, yeah. I mean, they, you know, I see even some theaters in New Hampshire where they're doing, you know, three different shows in the course of a week.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, they're playing, you know, completely different characters, completely different roles, you know, three, four, five consecutive nights.
I have to tell you that this was an experience for me this summer. Because Gene's Playhouse is in Lincoln, New Hampshire, and they do repertory summer stock, right? So I think this year they had four shows, and I did their Abbess for Sound of Music in first week of July. So I was up in Lincoln this summer, and I had forgotten what you had just said. I had forgotten what summer stock was. I had done it when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And to see these kids put these shows together during the day.
Yeah.
A totally different show,
and
then go out at night.
And,
you know,
do another show.
But you know what?
Yeah.
When you go to Europe, people don't realize this. If I go get if I'm in, you know, a little company in Europe, I have to do the same thing. I might be singing Bohème at night, but practicing during the day for Rigoletto.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's actually the same thing in Europe.
Yeah. It just amazes me from someone like myself. And many others who don't have any musical or theatrical background who just enjoy watching it.
Yeah.
But just, you know, I'm always blown away when I go to a Broadway show. I mean, I'm just blown away.
Yep.
It's really amazing. I mean, there are some New Hampshire people who perform on Broadway when Broadway used to be performing back in the day. But a couple of I know a couple of you know, performers that went to school with my daughter at Manchester Central.
Really?
Max Clayton and Kaylee Cronin, both
now
seasoned Broadway
cool?
performers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the best in the world. And you know, we kind of go Broadway here, but over in Austria, at least when I was living in Austria, I was shocked to learn how impressed people were over, you know, over in Europe with our musical theater.
Yeah.
You know, we all tend to think of opera as, ooh, opera, you know, big deal, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Hoity-toity.
Hoity-toity, right.
Yes.
You know, they have sort of the same, you know, bend down, kneel kind of thing with our musical theater, which I thought was surprising.
Really?
Because we grew up with it, right?
Sure.
We know what Hello, Dolly is, and we know what Funny Girl is, and, you know, they're great shows, part of the American musical experience.
Yeah.
But those musicals over there are our opera to them.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, so it's just
it's
like...
in reverse.
In reverse.
Yeah.
And I was very surprised to find that.
That is really amazing.
Yeah.
But you witnessed it.
I did.
You experienced it all over the world. Jane Cormier is with us here on WKXL. In this show that has no name.
Oh, not yet.
As yet. But this is just our first time, our maiden voyage here in this particular show. And Jane has a tremendous background in the arts. And currently, what are you up to?
Currently, I'm the choral director at the Founders Academy in Manchester, New Hampshire. So Founders Academy is a public charter school. And I love their mission, which is really offering students the opportunity to demonstrate and understand what leadership is all about. And their mission statement is what brought me to the school. So I head their choral department, and we're a very active department. We do a lot of performing. I can bring an awful lot to the table because, you know, of my history and my experience.
Yeah.
But I absolutely love my school and my kids. I wake up every single day. Do you know how lucky I am? I wake up every single day and have no problem getting ready to go to school.
Isn't that something?
Odd.
No problem getting out of bed and going to where you look forward to it.
I do.
Yeah, I can understand why. Just got an enthusiasm for life in general.
Well, in general. I tell you what, kids will keep you young. And I've never met a student that didn't have something that could be... What's the word I want? For instance, troubled students. What we say, you know, students that are challenging. Let's say that, I love that student almost more than the one that has a pretty easy trajectory in the academia. Mm-hmm. Academia, because you know what? You just got to find out what floats their boat. And once you do that, you can get in, and then you can make a difference. Then, once they trust you, you can open that door up. And to me, that's the best. That's the best reason to teach in the world.
We'll have more with Jane Cormier, Ken Cale here, 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com, right after this break. 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. We're delighted to have you with us, our listeners of WKXL, and you can hear all of the episodes of the great programming lineup on nhtalkradio.com. Ken Cale here with Jane Cormier, and this is our initial program, so you're in on a little bit of history today, folks, listening to WKXL. And Jane was just talking to us about Founders Academy, which is located in Manchester.
Correct.
On Perimeter Road?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so let's talk a little bit about, and the grades are?
6 to 12.
6 to 12.
Yeah, next year, I believe we're opening up to 5th grade.
Okay.
But this year, 6 to 12.
6 to 12.
I believe the school is, what, 7 years old? 7 years young?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've been there, it has to be 8 years young because I think I've been there 6 years now. You know what? I can't remember.
I tell you what, I'm in awe of all teachers. I really am. And I have 2 daughters. I have my oldest daughter teaches in public school in Charlestown, Massachusetts.
Wow.
Which is right next to the Bunker Hill Monument.
That's right. Yeah.
At Charlestown High School. Another daughter who lives in Brooklyn, New York, is not currently teaching, but she did teach in a charter school in Brooklyn, New York.
Cool.
So I have one, in public school now, one that taught at a charter school.
Right.
So a charter school, tell us a little bit about the differences of attending a charter school like yours as compared to a public school.
Well, charter schools are public schools,
mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah, sure.
So
yeah.
They do receive less funding than a student that goes to a public, regular public
less
school.
Less funding, yeah.
Less money, right. Less funding.
Yeah.
But it's still a public charter school.
Right.
It just has more flexibility with regard to how and what it can teach, right? Of course, all of the basics still go through the Department of Education. You can't mm-hmm. not teach core things,
right?
But you can have, accents on things. For instance, leadership is an entrepreneurship is a huge part of Founders Academy. So we can take our academics and we can, if we're doing it right, use those to fuel and to open up the leadership and, good ethics, good, just taking the classical Western civilization history,
mm-hmm.
putting it into the classes, and then giving the outlet for leadership opportunity. So that's for founders, that's what it's about. But public charter schools just offer parents another choice. And isn't choice good?
It's
choice
great.
Is great.
Yes, it is.
If students having a hard time for some reason at a public school, a mm-hmm. large public school,
right.
That parent has the opportunity at no cost to them to make that change that will help their student, their child. I can't imagine why anybody would have a problem with that.
Yeah, I think some people get confused and think, and I didn't present it especially well, but as you said, charter schools are public schools,
yeah.
but kind of non-traditional
yeah.
public schools.
Yeah.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways. I mean, they have to meet the need for their population.
Yeah.
But, if you go to a public school, you don't have to live in that region, right? So let's say that I opened up a charter school for the arts. If I did that, if I had a board and we went through that process through the Department of Ed, any student from anywhere could come to that school if they were interested in the performing arts.
Yeah.
And with that would be the accent, for that school. And I just think that's just an awesome opportunity.
Yeah. So if you were inclined
yeah.
And wanted to pursue, the performing arts, you would probably be better off going to someplace like Founders Academy rather than a more traditional
Well, Founders,
school.
Yeah, Founders yeah. doesn't do performing arts per se. I'm saying that, they do more classical
yeah.
Western civilization
mm-hmm.
kind of stuff.
Okay.
But I'm saying that if I was a young performer
yeah.
and I was a parent of that performer and there was a school
yeah.
that could offer the students more in-depth experience mm-hmm. with what it was they loved to do,
yeah.
I'd jump on that. And it wouldn't cost the family anything.
All right.
That's awesome.
So are the hours any different at a charter school than a more traditional public school?
No? I can't speak for everyone, but yeah. I don't believe that's true. I believe it's all pretty much the same. I believe all schools are mandated to have so many instructional hours.
Right.
And it would be probably up to the charter school to make sure they meet that. But I think they have the flexibility to do that as they see fit. But most schools are the same time frame.
In terms of hours spent and days going to class and that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
So what about the extracurricular activities?
At Founders?
At Founders, yeah.
So at Founders is very active. Everything from running clubs, chess clubs. We have a thriving, we had a teacher there who was there from, I think, the beginning. Her name was Kate Moat. She built a fabulous theater program that was really focused on those young students interested in theater.
Wow.
She's since left this year, sadly. We're going to so miss her. But theater program, I do a musical every year with the kids. We do concerts. We do in a normal year, pre-COVID. We would travel and bring our singers to outside venues to part of our mission, right? Mm-hmm. Leadership is actually doing it.
Yeah.
And you can have leadership in music.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, it's a very important part of our culture, without question. I think it obviously brings people together.
It does.
You know?
It absolutely does.
Despite what their political views may be or views of the world in general, music is, like they say, the universal language, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with you. And I think any time that we can have that, it's a good thing.
It is. And, we're seeing, and I know COVID has put kind of a monkey wrench into the entertainment world everywhere. We're talking about specifically here in the greater Concord and New Hampshire area. But we seem to have COVID aside, a very thriving arts community.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's getting better. I mean, I see New Hampshire going in a really good direction with this, because we do have more performance opportunities for young singers. We have more ways for them to get experience on stage. There's programs out there that any student or any youngster can get into to get on that stage.
Yeah.
Palace runs a little academy now, Palace Theater Academy. So all of that's good, and that brings, like you said, people together. Because there has to be places where we can agree.
Oh, absolutely. No, absolutely so. And it's great to see, new venues opening up, being revitalized. I think of the Bank of New Hampshire stage in downtown Concord, which is a great new small venue where, acts that may not be as well known or just starting out can get a break instead of the larger Capital Center for the Arts, which is also a terrific place.
Right.
And just in downtown Concord, you have two outstanding facilities.
Yeah. And don't forget the City Auditorium, the Audi.
Oh, absolutely.
Very active with the community. So how lucky is Concord?
Very, very fortunate.
Yeah.
Very fortunate for a city of its size. Yes, it
kidding.
It is the center of government and the capital city. But nonetheless, for a city of its size, the arts is, and musical theater and everything involved in the arts community, is just really a great opportunity here in Concord. And as you mentioned, Manchester as well with the Palace Theater, which has been around. They have another theater that they run as well.
And they have now built their consortium to offer three or four different venues.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
They have the Rex, which is a smaller theater now for, more less formal production, more concert style of production.
Yeah.
And they also have a couple of spaces where you could do dinner, parties, dinner performances in a small venue of about 150. I forget the name of it now. But those are growing. So every time that we see that, that's an important thing, because the more opportunity that we can give people to come in is more opportunity to bring everyone together.
And you're also seeing venues revitalized in places like Laconia, and Franklin.
Laconia.
And,
yeah. Holy moly. The lake, what is it? Lake Lakeside, or I forget. They opened up an opera house there. Lakeport. Isn't that terrible? I can't remember the name of it. But they just opened it up like a few months ago.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful facility inside. Wow. And don't forget the downtown big theater that they've just opened there in Laconia.
Yeah.
So Laconia is really coming for a renaissance.
Yeah. Oh,
you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, it means so much to the community, not only culturally, but economically
totally.
As well.
Yep.
Bringing people to that city that might not normally go to downtown Laconia,
right.
for example.
Absolutely.
Or downtown Concord, for that matter.
And that's the foundation people don't stop to think about. It's not just the money that comes into the community. It's what that facility can build inside that community.
Yeah.
For instance, you know, children's programming. You have a venue, you have a theater, right? Bring in children's programming so that the kids in that community can now become part of that whole, you know, that whole experience.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden now you're changing the inner culture of these communities. So it's a win-win no matter how you look at it.
And you know, it's really transformative sometimes for the entire life of a child. Someone who may be a little awkward, shy, but you know, once they get involved in theater, they become totally different, outgoing people.
I know that. People don't understand. I think they think that that's somehow hyperbole because
it's not. You know, I have a daughter that falls into that category. You know,
it's true, and I see it every day. I mean, music, the arts, for someone that maybe isn't the most academically inclined or talented. Because don't forget, this isn't about being smart or not. This is about where do your talents lie? Where do your the points that you enjoy and that you can understand about yourself, where do they lie? And sometimes it's not in math. Sometimes it's not in science. Sometimes it can be in this performance, you know, venue idea.
Yeah.
And these kids, that venue opens up the doors to all of the other things, you know?
It has changed many, many lives.
It has.
Over the years. There's no doubt about it. We are with Jane Cormier today, the delightful Jane Cormier, who has been around the world performing and teaching music. And she's currently at the Founders Academy in Manchester. You can check that out online and all that they have to offer. But we have to take a quick break. Here at 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Welcome back. Ken Cale here with Jane Cormier. Our first program here on WKXL.
And we've
already been around the world.
That's right.
Talking music and different venues and the very vibrant musical scene in the state of New Hampshire, which I think is getting more vibrant all the time. And,
yes.
And you see it, you know, up close and personal. I know you're still so active in the arts in New Hampshire as well.
Yes.
Not only opera, but other avenues as well.
Yeah.
I'd just be interested as someone who really enjoys Broadway like myself, and I'm sure there are many others, you know, that may not have had the good fortune of actually seeing shows on Broadway in New York, but see it on a regional basis and summer theaters. We have a lot of those here in New Hampshire and in the area as well. So we're fortunate in that regard. I'd like to hear what some of your favorite Broadway shows are.
Okay, my favorite Broadway shows. Well, you know, I'm biased. Of course, I have to say Phantom. Phantom has to be one. Because really, having done a wide swath of music, I don't believe that there's another piece that's been written so far that encompasses all three parts of musical theater, right? Which is singing, dance, and theatrical acting, right? Mm-hmm. I think it covers them all. So Phantom has to be in there. I'm a huge fan of Gypsy. I love the musical show Gypsy.
Yeah, yeah.
Great show. And you know what's really sad is some of these shows, just because of where we are in our society right now, I think some of these shows aren't necessarily produced the way they were.
Right. They because they wouldn't be politically correct.
Well, it's so sad. That breaks my heart. Gypsy has a lot of things in it, some things in it that, you know, that today's public might think were kind of risque or, you know, the Me Too culture might not like it. But what a piece of human spirit and the music in that piece.
Oh, it is fantastic. Yeah.
I love Gypsy. I like Funny Girl.
Yeah.
I like Hello Dolly. I'm not a huge fan of a lot of Weber's stuff. So I think the only other Weber's show I really love, Jesus Christ Superstar. Mm-hmm. It's a masterpiece.
Yeah.
A total masterpiece. What else? There's probably a ton more.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a real fan of musical theater. When you go back to the beginning of musical theater, how it came out of the South and how it came from vaudeville, really small little acts, right, that played by themselves, and they sort of found a way to tie everything together, do little shows that now became a book musical.
Yeah.
It took generations to get the couple of generations, but it really is the story of America. The how musical theater developed culturally in our country is a story of how America developed in our country, and which is the truth. You know, when you look at any country, you can tell an awful lot about their society and their culture and their history from their art, from the art of that country.
Yeah.
So we're no different than that.
No.
You know?
No. So very well said, Jane Cormier. And, you know, it's fun. I like to go. I have a daughter that lives in New York, and she loves theater. So anytime I'm down there and the theaters are open, which hopefully they will be in the not-too-distant future, even if you have to wear a mask while you're watching it, that would be fine by me. But it's always fun to go down there and see a Broadway show. And, you know, there are different ways you can see it. I know tickets generally are expensive.
Right.
But, you know, they have those ticket places in New York where you can get, you know, half-price tickets on the day of the show and that sort of thing. So it makes it a little bit more accessible for most people.
Absolutely.
Like myself. So sometimes we would go in and, you know, on a Wednesday or a Saturday and have our you know, sights set on seeing two shows.
Isn't that great, huh?
Yeah, and it is. And I think the great part of it in that scenario is that you don't exactly know what you're going to see.
Yeah, that's
that
true.
Particular day. And you get to the tickets place, you know, in Herald Square in New York,
you can see what's some opportunity, what's open for you.
Yeah, exactly. So absolutely. It's kind of fun that way. Yeah,
absolutely. And it's the American way, isn't it?
It is.
You know, go with the flow. And embrace the change, you know?
Exactly. Jane Cormier is here from the Founders Academy and Vice Chairman of the Music and Visual Arts Department. Is that correct?
Yeah, I guess so. It's been a long time since I've used that title, but
okay.
How about I'm comfortable saying that I'm Choral Director. How's
choral
that?
Choral Director. All right. Everything choral.
That's it.
Goes through Jane Cormier at the Founders Academy in Manchester. You can find out more about, you know, that institution online. Ken Cale here with Jane at 103.9. 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. 1039, 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Welcome back, Ken Cale. Jane Cormier here on our first show, and we're heading down the home stretch. And as we anticipated, you know, it flies by.
It does.
When you're having fun.
That's right.
Yes.
Always. I used to do a program here at KXL like really long time ago. And
well, it's been on the air now for, what, 75 years?
Yeah.
So, but
wasn't quite 75.
No,
but certainly was. I think it was probably about 15
really?
Years ago. Yeah, long time ago. And I always had fun doing it. And that's why when this opportunity came up to talk with you today, I thought, oh, my God, that'd be a hoot. So I'm thrilled to be here and be able to talk with you.
Well, as am I. And so going back those 15 years or so here at WKXL, what did you talk about on that program?
It was an arts program.
Oh, it was, yeah.
Yep. I talked. I gave a program, I think, once a week. Plus, I did some other stuff with other hosts. But it was an arts program. And we talked about everything from opera singers to composers to musical theater.
Yeah.
You know, so it was a pretty open concept. But I would bring in guests and we'd have, you know, we'd have fun. I think radio is really important. I think radio is an art form that I hope we keep it because, I mean, in the form that like having this kind of discussion. Right now it's so commercial, I think.
Yeah. No, and I think you're right, and it's important. I think local radio is very important, like WKXL has been for so many years. I mean, it's really been an institution here in Concord, in the Concord area, and has had a lot of great programs over the years, as it still does to this very day.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I know that today, you know, satellite radio is a big thing.
Right.
And listen, I have it on in my car quite a bit, I must confess.
Yeah.
But there is always room for great local radio.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's what WKXL has done so brilliantly for so many years and has been a major part of the community for 75 years.
Hard to believe, huh? Wowie zowie.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, and they've had some great folks here over the years that have done great shows and became legendary in the town because of what they did. So, you know, there is certainly always room for it. I mean, there are a lot more choices these days on the radio dial. But again, you need that local touch.
Mm-hmm.
To let people know what's going on.
Yeah, in their community.
The local scene. Yep. And, you know, some people just are totally unaware of everything that's available to them.
Yeah.
Whether it be in Concord or anywhere else.
I agree. We're going so fast.
Yeah.
We go too fast. And because we're so, you know, we're like on this run to get everything done quickly, I find myself even. Missing stuff that I would probably have loved to have participated in, but just blew right by it.
Yeah.
And let's face it, a community radio station that's really supported can be a real asset to folks that are busy because it can tell you about what's happening right in your community.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a big deal. That's a big deal for a community.
Yeah, and no station, I don't think, in this area has exemplified local radio like WKXL has over the years. So certainly applaud them for that, even when I was a competitor for many years. But glad to be on board now.
Well, I'm sure they're glad to have you, too.
Well, no, it's a lot of fun being here. And I host a show with Dan Feltes here on WKXL.
A political show.
A political show.
Oh,
which
my.
I mean, I don't know who came up with the name, but it's called Feltes and Kale.
Okay.
So, you know, so I don't know who came up with it, but very creative.
Okay.
And we're on every morning at 11:05, so Monday through Friday, that is. So if you tune in, you know, you'll hear some political discussion, but we talk about many other things, too.
Oh, good.
Including theater sometimes, sports, you name it. We run the gamut.
Awesome. Yeah, awesome. I'm a sports fanatic myself.
Oh, you are?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, my gosh.
We only have a minute left. We could get... Get into that. I'm sure we will do that in the future. All right. So who is your favorite baseball team?
Oh, you picked the one sport I'm least. I'd have to say Boston just because I'm a homebody.
Oh, okay.
But baseball's my least favorite.
What's your favorite?
My favorite?
Yes.
Bruins and the Buccaneers. I know. I don't have a turncoat.
The Buccaneers.
And the Patriots. I love the Patriots, too.
So
but
did you have any interest in the Buccaneers at all before Tom Brady went there?
No. Him and Gronk have given us so many years of incredible entertainment.
Very few in the Tampa Bay area had any interest in the Buccaneers before Brady got there, let alone here in New Hampshire.
Just goes to show you what can happen.
Well, he's the GOAT and Tom Brady. And I can't wait until the Patriots host the Buccaneers early this season.
Yes,
that is going to be something. That may be. I think that may turn out to be one of the highest rated regular season games in the history of the National Football League.
I would be betting you that that's true. I wonder if they're going to have betting on that, like what the viewership of that game will be.
Oh, they have betting on everything.
I know.
Yeah, betting on everything, Jane.
I bet it's through the roof.
Yeah, there you go. It will be. Jane, a delight to have you with us here today on WKXL, and hopefully we'll make this a regular thing, and maybe someday the show will get a name.
There you go.
Thanks for being with us today. 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com.